baby.
Yeah, right. But no, you're absolutely right.
Here, this kind of feels maybe lazy a little bit.
Welcome to Set Cheddar Park. Movie screenings.
Why not, you know?
Yeah, at that point, why not?
It's got to be Saturday somewhere. It does sound familiar.
It's hilarious. Hello! I think we did like 5 shows on this movie.
My name is Tom Cone.
Oh, you bite your tongue if this is not hold up.
Cream corn tonight.
Cream corn tonight.
That should be good corn time. It's a movie. Just wait for the big giveaway at 9.
Happy Saturday, Robert.
Happy Saturday to you.
How is the world in Middle America?
It is chilly. It feels like every Thursday we get snowstorms. And I drove out to North Platte, Nebraska, which is almost in. I did drive all the way into the Mountain Time Zone. That's how far across Nebraska I was going. So, to do a couple locations, but then I had a thing. But yeah, every Thursday there's like snow and ice, and so I drove back earlier than anticipated to avoid all that. But anyway, otherwise it's all good.
I like that there's another time zone in Nebraska that if you go farther west.
You hit Mountain Time Zone eventually. So,
and then Mountain Time Zone never gets with the program. They always opt to like not do daylight savings time. They're in their own world. Well,
Nebraska's supposed to stop doing that, I think, at some point, but it is kind of a waste. But
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, if you have 2 thumbs and you're listening to the show, you're listening to the podcast, well, Set Jetter Saturdays with Robert Patterson. Check out his website at setjetter.com. We have a very exciting show tonight. We're going to do What You've Been Watching, which has become a favorite staple of the show. And then we're going to get into continuing the Razzies year by year. Today's will be 1981. And I look through the list and there are some fun ones on there, but there's also some doozies.
I would hope they're doozies.
I know we're doing our job wrong if they're all exciting. But I wanted to talk about in what you've been watching. We mentioned on the last few prior shows, Capricorn 1.
Yes.
And you've now, you said you watch this like at least once a year.
I do. I have it on DVD and Blu-ray because the Blu-ray doesn't have all the extras. And I'm one of those like, are they going to come out with a 4K? You know?
Yeah, because before I tell you like what I thought about it, I want to know what's your, so you watch it every year. So you like genuinely love this movie.
Yeah, well, I don't know. There's something captivating about it. It's a it's a good action movie. The stunts are all, you know, obviously it was in the 70s. The stunts are all real, you know. So there's kind of has that authenticity to it. It was full of stars at the time, you know, like in one or two scene, you know, Telly Savalas, Karen Black, two of Barbara Streisand's husbands are in it.
Exactly.
Ellie Gould and Jim Brolin. But yeah, so there's just something about it that's kind of intrigued me. So I remember I watched it like, you know, ABC Sunday night movie of the week, whatever it happened to be. So I think that's when I first watched it as a kid. But so yeah, tell me your thoughts on it. Your first time viewing? Yeah.
The extras in the, like the DVDs, are these like deleted scenes or?
No, I think there's a little bit behind the scenes and audio commentary. Nothing too exciting, but I had to see what they were. You know?
Okay. Because I went into this movie with an open mind, as you do, and I genuinely love this movie. And for 2 main reasons. One is the cast. You have 70s James Brolin. You have O.J. Simpson, who has a very small role. And that's certainly not a reason to love a movie. But seeing him, he's actually like a good actor. I mean, from coming off the football field, he held his own.
They got a good performance out of him here.
Got a good performance. Elliot Gould is great in there. Sam Waterston's in it. Mm-hmm. Hal Holbrook, who I always loved him. He was a great actor. And the only person I knew going into this was James Brolin, just because we like talked about it, and I think OJ. So I was really surprised at the cast. And 2 was it's like old school filmmaking. You know, like you said, they use their own, they do all their own stunts. There's really no like special effects. And there's so many, they get you right out of the gate. And I'm not going to spoil anything if you haven't seen it, but just to give the description of the movie for the listeners, it's a 1978 thriller film, which a reporter discovers that there's a supposed Mars landing landed by the crew, and it's been faked, and there's a whole conspiracy theory. But it kind of ties into like the fake moon landing, which obviously it's not fake, But just such a I generally love this movie. Everything but the slow motion ending, I thought was like fantastic.
Hilarious. They had to end it, yeah. And those, well, I don't want to spoil it, but yeah. So, and actually, yeah, I went to that. So I've been to a handful of locations. I haven't created the page officially for this movie yet, but yeah, I've been working on the locations over the years.
Yeah, which I'm really excited to see. The Capricorn One locations, were they like the California desert? Like, give us a tease.
So the desert ones, yeah, they were up in the desert, and I think they also went to Arizona for a couple of them. I can't remember. So those I have not done, but Brenda Vaccaro's house is right out, right by CBS. Like, literally, they could have walked from the studio over there. Some Studio City, the when he loses control of his car and over the bridge, of course, that's down in Long Beach. But yeah, so a little bit all across LA. It's funny, I did find it, you know, I do all this research and I found like this press packet and it says, you know, the house located at 12675, you know, like they actually list the address for the house. I'm like, well, that's convenient.
Here you go. You know what's really interesting too about Capricorn One, and you can see where Apollo 13 took some cues, because they kind of take place around the same time in the 70s. And the big dilemma they had in Capricorn One was, without giving anything away, why would they fake a Mars mission or a trip to space? And it's because interest in the space program in the 70s was waning a lot. Like, it was huge in the 60s. And then they went to the moon and it kind of just went downhill from there, because where do you go after you have the moon landing? So, you know, there's a whole political thing where, well, they're going to cut funding to NASA, and they actually do have the real NASA, like the old school logos that are now the current ones. Like, NASA, it was all very authentic.
Yeah, NASA helped them with this movie, surprisingly.
Did they really?
Yeah, which you would think it was kind of like, it's, you know, like SeaWorld.
That is surprising. You would think that's like FedEx helping Castaway. You're like, this is bad for business, but they helped them.
They did. So, despite they're kind of the bad guys in the movie. But interesting. So,
it gives a moral paradox. Like, what do we do?
Yeah.
To cut funding, and, you know, and there's all kinds of personal. You know, and it kind of took a North by Northwest feel towards the end of it, which I thought was great. Yeah. And I love 70s James Brolin. You know, between that and the Amityville Horror, he's great.
He was at the top there.
Yeah, he was at the top.
I think he must have done Amityville right after this, I think. Too soon. So, but
it was great. And this was a TV movie, right?
No, it was a movie.
It was theatrically released? You said you saw it on TV.
I didn't see it until I was like, I was 8 when it came out, so I didn't see it till it was on TV. Surprisingly, I don't think I did. But.
Well, it's a good movie, so thank you for recommending that. The only other one I think I have to check off my list is I still haven't watched Galaxy Quest, so I have to do that.
Jeez.
I know. But Capricorn One, folks, check it out. Great recommendation, Robert. And the other things I've been watching are I've concluded The Last of Us.
And I watched all of it now, so I.
Oh, you're
caught
all caught up.
As well. Yes.
What's your policy on it? Your policy. I'm canceling it.
No, I liked it. It was. I don't think I ever played the video game. There's some things that seem familiar to me, but obviously it looks they replicated some of the video game scenes from what I can tell. So there were some amusing moments there. So it kept, even though it was pretty. Episodic, more episodic than I would thought. You know, where. Yeah. They have, you know, this happens in this episode, and they kind of move on to another location, another kind of set of actors, which is great. But so I thought it held up decently well.
I thought it was good too. I thought it had kind of a few snooze episodes in the middle. You know, it kind of started off really strong, but it picked up momentum at the end, and it wasn't afraid to take some pretty risky chances. It didn't feel like the producers were trying to play it safe and virtue signal, and it felt very genuine, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it.
Yep. Some The Stand, you know, they show up in Salt Lake. I was like, going to bump into Gary Sinise. Yeah.
It had such a Stand. Yeah. So show up in Salt Lake, and it had such a Stand feel in some episodes, which was great. I'm glad you got a chance to watch that.
Yes.
And I watched U2, the David Letterman. It's called A Sort of Homecoming on Disney Plus, which was such a nice surprise because I forgot that that was going to air on St. Patrick's Day, and I was up Thursday night, and at midnight, U2 released their new album and that at the same time. So I would, needless to say, I was up to like 3:30 in the morning listening to the new album.
Is it a documentary then, or what is this?
It's a documentary. David Letterman goes to Ireland and he follows around U2, and they actually redo 40 of their like best songs. And they change some of the lyrics because like a lot of them were political and the times have changed. So like they changed some of the lyrics and like modernized it. But it was just Bono and the Edge because Larry's suffering from an injury, the drummer, and Adam Clayton was like doing a movie or something. So it was just the two guys. It was really just intimate conversation with Letterman. And he really brought it. It was very touching. The highlight was at the end, they actually wrote a song for Letterman and they like made it a real produced song. And they show Letterman like getting into the Irish Sea, like freezing cold, like swimming, and they play the song over it. It's like a really great song. So it was
okay. It was
cool. And then they released an album of the songs, which was good. Gotcha. So yeah, if you're into U2 or documentaries, check it out. And just because I watched the Capricorn one was the biggest one. The other thing I did was The Mandalorian.
Yes, and so, I'm caught up as well for three episodes so far, I think.
Yes.
So far so good. There's always something about it where, unlike Kenobi and some of those ones, I feel everything is kind of done just right. Not super fabulous, but everything is done right with The Mandalorian.
Touché. They're not pushing like other storylines on you that nobody asked for. It's done.
Correct. Yeah.
It's done in a good light.
There's not a little Leia running around.
No.
Where they can barely catch her.
Right. And you're like, well, she's going to live. And you're like, what's going to happen? Stay tuned till next week.
Yeah, that's like when Uncle Owen, you know, like she has a lightsaber. And I'm like, well, he's going to be alive in 10 years. You're not going to kill him. So, you know, what's going on? Or do something to him and Aunt Beru so they age 30 years over the next 10 years, because that does happen.
Right. And I think The Mandalorian doing it right after Return of the Jedi is a good time to do it, because it's so far removed from the sequels, you know, back to 2015 one, that there's a lot more room to play, where when you have centralized characters before A New Hope, you're like, we know what's going to happen.
What are they going to do? And you said you didn't know each other, but now you do, but you forgot. And
right.
Nobody cares. Anyway.
Nobody cares. Yeah. What about you? What have you been watching, Si?
Quite a bit, because I can't remember last time we've talked. So I restarted Picard season 3. Picard season 1 was a snoozer, but I got through it. It was such a snooze that I did not watch season 2 at all. I just like couldn't do it. I heard
just throwing the towel together.
Bad stuff. And for some reason I thought, well, let me start season 3. And so far, I think they're on episode 5 or 6. It's
okay.
This is better than any of the Next Generation movies by far.
Really?
In fact, this past episode, I was literally so excited to see a particular character return. I won't spoil it, but I was like, beyond excited. So I haven't been excited about Star Trek in many, 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 many years. So they must have gotten whole new writers or something. But
are you a Trekkie? Is that?
I don't think so. I don't have any Trek stuff. You know, I enjoyed the movies. I saw the original series here and there. I kind of watched The Next Generation, you know, because I was kind of in that. There's nothing else on at that time.
Robert says he was in it, he means he was a cast member in it.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so if those that have might abandoned Picard, it's definitely worth kind of picking that back up now.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
Megan, I finally watched.
Megan.
Since it was streaming on Peacock or Paramount Plus or somewhere. Did you watch that yet or?
No, my wife tried to get me to watch it like 3 times. And I was like, nah, I'm not. I don't think I am, unless you say it's really good and to watch.
No, it's satisfactory at best. It feels like, for some reason, it feels like a lesser The Invisible Man, even though it's a completely different story, but it follows these same beats of, you know.
Really?
Yeah, it's just kind of, but you really brings nothing to the table. You think it would, you know, because it had a good PR campaign, obviously.
Yeah.
But I was just like, yeah, this is, and it's one of those, you know, like, you know, somebody points out, what's this in the corner? Like that old thing, you know, and I haven't used that in years. And you know, it's going to show up in act three, you know, I'm just like,
right. That old trope.
Yeah.
It's what's that in the corner? That's like a step up from, well, we found this old map in the basement that grandpa had in his stuff.
Why don't I just, and they have a close up. Let's just put that away for now. You know, like, all right.
All right.
No, I'm not worth it. Yeah, I finally watched Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Yes. Who are you going to call, Robert?
Not them.
You're not going to call the Stranger Kids thing to come help you out of a jam?
So, and I vaguely remember, I didn't want to spoil anything, so I vaguely remember we talked, when you had seen it originally.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was also one of those that really didn't do anything for me, and the nostalgia was a little bit too on the nose every time that I was like,
Right. Right. That's the thing. There's the nostalgia, which you have to have regardless because it's such a beloved franchise. You should have done it like early on and then like made it a compelling story, but they put it on too much and the end result wasn't anything to like clap about. You're like, even without, I mean, it's 3 years old. We can give spoilers, I think.
Is it that old now?
When the spoilers are 2 years, maybe. Yeah. Spoiler alert. When the cast comes back, it just seems so forced and like, it's nice to see them on screen, but yeah, you're absolutely right. It wasn't, it didn't. Too much on the nose.
Yeah. So, so disappointing, you know, kind of maybe 10 years ago, it would maybe meant a little bit more. I don't know.
But, I mean, it's a love letter to Harold Ramis.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's good that they did that. But I think, you know, they just did it too much later. I mean, it's 30 years. You either have to do something completely fresh and new. And the kids weren't really doing it for me.
No, I was like, who is this for? You know, I don't.
Right. Like Paul Rudd didn't need to be in it. He was just kind of there.
He didn't do Halloween Kills because of this. So,
is that true?
That is true. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
He picked a doozy. Speaking of Halloween Kills, congrats to our friend Jamie Lee on her Oscar win.
Oh yes. So, you know, it's probably one of those that, you know, let's be honest, this is probably her only chance.
Right.
It has been our only chance or whatever. And
yeah,
sometimes there's Oscars where it's for a movie, but obviously I think it's kind of recognizing the body of work as well. So, but
like Christopher Plummer.
What did he win for?
He won maybe 2-3 years ago before he passed away for the movie that they reshot. I mean, I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, for...
I mean, his performance was good, but
yeah.
I mean, I think that was more of, he's 89, folks. He was in The Sound of Music, and he was like old then. Let's give him something. So I feel like you're absolutely right.
Yeah, Angela Bassett will have another chance, you know. So
yeah, of course.
But yeah, and it's the Oscars. I mean, they have picked very bad ones as well. So it's just a game. They all know that. So but anyway, but yes, congrats to her. So speaking of, I before the Oscars, I finally watched Tar because I heard a lot of good things about that with Kate Blanchett.
Yeah, what is that about? I haven't seen it. Is it great? No,
I did not care for it. It's,
you don't care for it, it means it
I
sucks.
Do not. It was overly long. I think they want you to kind of get enveloped in, you know, kind of long takes and long scenes of her character. But I just didn't care. And when you have, there was really no. I go back to no likable characters, and not that you need to have just to fall in love with every character, but it was just like people get what they deserve. I was just like,
people get what they deserve.
Yeah. But
so is it a longer film?
It felt, I think it's over 2 hours, or at least it felt that way. So, but yeah, it's like, I'm like, is this where it's going to end? Is this going to, you know, like, if you have 4 loads of laundry, this is the movie for you. So
yeah, if you're swapping out your winter and summer wardrobe and you have to wash some stuff for about 3-4 hours, fire it up.
This is the one. So in the same vein, I also watched Ghoulies Go to College.
Oh, yes, Ghoulies Go to College. I always confuse Ghoulies and Critters. I know they're two completely different movies, but the sequels all run together for me.
Kind of all the kind of post Gremlins. Right. Yeah, I think somebody had messaged me about a location or something. I'm like, I've never seen Ghoulies Go to College, but then it's like, all right, go down that rabbit hole. And
how was it?
Passable. I mean, it was just typical. Was it an 80s movie? I can't remember. But
1990.
Was it 90? Okay. So, yeah. But just exactly what you would expect from a Ghoulies Go to College of movie. So, and I was kind of vaguely watching, but it's, you know, things are happening on screen and I'm more or less looking for location clues. I'll have to add it to my list.
Were the locations in California?
Yeah, mostly USC and UCLA, kind of between the two in different houses.
Ghoulies Goes to College does not even have a Wikipedia page.
Oh my gosh.
We gotta get on that. But the original Ghoulies, which was 85, that was like, wasn't this kind of the same vein as Critters, like a horror comedy, like a Gremlins?
Yeah, they Gremlins did well enough that that's where we kind of got a lot of these things, and Ghoulies did really well, I think, on video. It was probably direct to video. And
yeah,
made multiple versions. But yeah, so a new one for me.
Ghoulies Go to College, folks. Check it out.
I also watched History of the World Part 2. So have you seen History of the World Part 1?
Yeah, the original from like 81.
Mel Brooks. So
yeah, I did not watch the sequel, though.
So original was, I mean, it's of its time. A lot of humor that you can't do anymore, but it's Mel Brooks, and there's still parts that make me laugh. Can't go wrong with Madeline Kahn, and B. Arthur has a scene in it and so forth. So I was kind of curious. History of the World Part 2, I think it was a Hulu original, multi-part series. Whew.
The pause and then, whew.
Unwatchable.
Oh, really?
I literally did my best to get through all of it, and I just could not believe how moronic it was. They had a decent cast come in for different skits, but, you know, it's Abe Lincoln bumping his tall hat into the doorway humor, and it's just like, so anyway, I dare you to watch an episode.
How involved was Mel Brooks in it? I mean,
he had to be semi-involved because he opened every show. It was since I'm recording, like, hi, this is, and he looks at his joke, Mel Brooks, the same every time. And then he would announce whatever we're about to watch, you know, Mary Magdalene, you know, like, and then the skit would start, you know, and we're like, back to the Last Supper, you know, and it's just like,
Now, this could have been so much better, though. I mean,
yes,
in terms of like the substance, the ideas were there. They just did terrible jokes kind of thing.
Yeah, there's one I kind of smirked at, but otherwise it was like, really? This was a chance, you know, to poke fun of history.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no.
Because I always thought even the original, it's just a clever idea. It's like drunken history. Yeah. It's a fun. Yeah. There's so much history is like the greatest source of material ever.
Yeah. Poke fun of it. It's just
a shame that they messed it up. It's on Hulu, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yeah.
I was going to watch it. And then I think that same night you texted me or messaged me and said, like, it's 40 years too late or something. And I'm like, 29 years too late. And I'm like,
it's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
I have a certain friend that likes it, but he lives in Colorado, so everybody's high. So just,
yeah, right.
That's why it's funny.
Rocky Mountain High.
I was very excited that King Kong Lives arrived on Blu-ray. So,
yes.
Ooh, had pristine copy.
So good. The large scalpels for the transplant.
Yes. The better picture, I was like, oh, I need to find a few more of these locations. So if I ever get down to Tennessee and some of those places, not highly likely, but.
Do you have a King Kong Lives page?
No.
Okay.
No, I've never.
I was going to say, if you did, that must have snuck through the cracks.
No, I haven't been down to that, to those areas. So Wilmington and some Tennessee areas and stuff like that. There's only a few locations, but. The Atlanta Institute, even though it's not near Atlanta or anything like that. But
yeah. The Atlanta Institute.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you got it. I know that was on a, like, can't turn away one year.
I know. I cannot wait. And I know Big Bus is coming out on Blu-ray too. So it's going to be a good year for Blu-ray. So,
oh, yeah.
I just watched Triangle of Sadness.
How is it?
Interesting watch. Didn't love it, but not quite what I was expecting, but more pleasantly surprised. There was a little bit more to it than I thought.
Does it leave you with, okay, so like it wasn't satisfying?
Satisfying enough.
Okay.
But nothing no need to rewatch ever again.
Was it gory?
No. But it has some gross moments.
Oh, okay.
Ship sickness moments, I guess I'll say.
Oh, body, okay. Yep.
Yeah, so, and definitely, it's an interesting three acts, you know, because you can't quite tell, you know, by the preview what's going on. It talks, you know, it's a look at classism and gender and so forth, but kind of done in three acts. So probably worth a watch some Sunday.
Oh, okay. Triangle of Sadness. All right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And Scream 6.
Scream 6. Goes to New York, right?
Yes. I felt like it needed a subtitle, but it doesn't. So, have you seen it? Or?
I have not. Yeah, I have not. I did have your page up, though, if you wanted to go through it while you explain it, if you want to hold that for later.
We could hold that for another time. So, I've not been, but I like this much one. I'll just say, I like this much better than Scream 5.
For
the most part. So the first two acts, pretty good and kind of kept me engaged. Last act and final scenes kind of go off the rails.
Really?
And people are literally fatally wounded, but are fine.
Really?
Hopefully this won't be spoilers, but people is like, they're still walking around, like, you know, people like literally holding their stomach. I was like, come on. Oh,
like they're mortally wounded, but they're still like,
there's
mobile.
A hand, there's at least a few that are, should not be breathing at all.
Oh.
And are literally just walking around 5 minutes later with a
terrible
band. And I'm just like, it really made the stakes gone, you know? I mean,
yeah.
It's just like, I was like, is Dewey going to be around? Bad. You know, like, people are gutted and they're fine. You know, I just.
Yeah, that's so bad. Even for a slasher movie, it's like, come on, guys.
Yeah, so it did. So there's a little, they do have Jason Takes Manhattan on the TV in the background of one scene. So
no way.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. What scene was it?
An early scene where somebody comes back to their apartment and it you could just see it in the background. It's the girl in the shower scene.
On the boat.
If I remember right, yeah. So,
perfect.
But once again, yeah, this is shot, except for a few establishing shots in New York. It's Canada. This time, same Montreal. Thing. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
And you can tell, you know.
Yeah, you can.
They don't milk the New York location. As you think that they probably would. It really could have been any urban setting. So
they never really milk the New York location in a lot of times for budgetary reasons, obviously.
Yeah. And you don't, I mean, I think in people's minds, you know, or sometimes the promo is, I mean, New York, new rules and stuff like that. It was like people are kind of expecting some Times Square stuff, you know, I'm guessing, I don't know.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, now they're like, no, we just wanted an urban setting. I'm like, well, you're kind of pitching it
right.
The wrong way. So, as we all know, Kirby is back, even though she kind of feels like a different character to me. But
okay.
So
she comes back and she feels different, almost like they rewrote her whole story arc.
You know, and it's been over 10 years. So obviously she's grown up. I kind of miss, I liked her. She was one of the favorite characters to Scream 4.
You've mentioned that before.
Yeah.
I
was like, oh, I got to find some of these locations. I kind of had I felt the need to do that, you know.
Yeah, so you're feeling it now.
There wasn't too much out. There was a few that were out there and stuff like that, but I just really needed to sew it together. But yeah, so it'll be, I'm sure, streaming soon enough.
Yeah, you your streaming radar is pretty good. I you told me to hold off on buying the Cabin, the Shyamalan movie, and then you're like, it's going to be on Peacock next week, and we were just going to like rent that two nights ago, and I was like, nope, Robert says it's like coming next week. We're going to hold tight.
We can talk about that when you see it, but yeah. So obviously, I've had quite a bit in the background or in theaters.
Yeah. I'm glad you got a chance to see Scream 6. I know you're a completist in both watching the franchise and doing locations. So that's really cool. You got a chance to.
If they would have, they just didn't nail the landing. I was just, they could have been a good. Neve Campbell's not missed. I'll say that.
She's not missed.
No. And they really didn't need Gale either. I think that it was time. It felt like time enough. They could have just moved on.
Yeah. Okay. It was okay. Well, keep us posted on if you when you want to do that page.
Well, I feel like there might be some spoilers in the. There's enough locations could be spoilerish. So.
Oh, okay.
We'll let it lie for a while.
You're a conscious man.
Try to.
All right. Well,
so it's the killer. I'm kidding.
It's the killer. Here's what happens at the end.
I always remember, and we talked about this as we left the theater for Scream 6, and I talked about it with you, leaving Scream 2 opening night, and there's a huge line in the hallway, and waiting for the next showing to go in, and we're all like, we were excited. I thought, I love Scream 2. We were all leaving, and some guy yells out, it was like, it was Billy Loomis's mother, and you just heard this, I was like, what a fucker.
Seriously, man, that's terrible.
Spoilers for Scream 2, I should say. But,
right, I do like Scream 2 as well, but that's a piece of shit move to do that.
Yeah.
Mean.
Anyway,
it's time to get into a segment called Revisiting the Razzies by Year. This year is 1981, oof. And as we mentioned in the prologue, there are there's some doozies in here, so the Razzies kind of nailed it. What do you think about this list versus 1980 in terms of like quality?
This has some favorites in mine, or at least ones I kind of recognize a little bit more, so and it could be as we go move along that'll probably happen more often, or some that they might have been my favorite as a 11 or 12 year old, and I'm like, but they were really not too good. So
which it's amazing when you're young, the favorites you have, and then you get older, you're like, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
Dick Tracy?
That's on you.
That's all me. Robert never claimed to like Dick Tracy.
I have never did, so.
No. So what do we got? Let's kick it off with.
We kind of start back with a worst supporting actress. So some of the nominees, Rutanya Alda for Mommy Dearest. So she played Carol Ann, which was kind of a conglomerate character of, I was going to say Faye Dunaway's, Joan Crawford's assistants over the years. So Rutanya actually came out with a book. What was it? I can't remember the name of it. So kind of talking about the making of Mommy Dearest and really kind of trashing Faye Dunaway. So, but actually I didn't care too much for the book. I love Mommy Dearest, but I felt like it was her book was a little too self-serving. So,
It was all about her.
Yeah, it was like how unfair it was for her. I'm like, you know what? It's not your movie.
Ooh-hoo.
Yeah. Farrah Fawcett for Cannonball Run.
Cannonball Run. Don't forget, they made like a few of those. And I remember like Sinatra was in one of them. They really tried to like bring that franchise out.
Yeah, it was pre-Fast and Furious,
That's kind of what it was.
Yeah.
It makes kind of wonder, like the 80s Fast and Furious.
Yeah. I don't know why Farrah was called out, though, because I'm sure it was full of bad performances. So another Mommy Dearest, Mara Hobel, I think is how you pronounce her name. So she played young Christina Crawford. So it's unusual. They didn't take this one back. So no longer nominate kids. But Mara, she was good. So I was kind of like, that probably should not have been a thing. And Shirley Knight for Endless Love. I don't know who Shirley plays in the movie, but obviously she did a bad job, or because she was in a bad movie, she just got lumped in. So
Endless Love was Brooke Shields. This is around the time she made Blue Lagoon, like a year later.
I think so. Yeah. And she's probably still a teenager. I think she's playing 16 in the movie. I'm sure it's completely inappropriate now.
Oh yeah. But,
as are a lot of our 80s.
it was. It did well though, theatrically. It was
Well, it had the song as well, which kind of propelled it. And kind of
great song,
turned into something else. So, but the winner for Worst Supporting Actress was Diana Scarwid for Mommy Dearest.
Mommy Dearest.
They were just sweeping it.
They were mopping the floor with it.
Yeah. As you know, and we'll talk about it later. So Mommy Dearest is one of my favorite movies. So
yeah, it's a great movie.
And I love Diana Scarwid. My actually favorite performance of hers is in Psycho 3. So
Yeah.
I bet you it was probably nominated for a Razzie as well. I haven't looked ahead, but so she was the winner that year.
Yep. Congratulations, Diana Scarwid. They did really mop the floor with Mommy Dearest.
They did. So we're supporting actor. We'll start with kind of going backwards. For nominees, Danny DeVito for Going Ape.
Going Ape. What is this?
It was one of, you know, like,
oh, you're
early
kidding me.
Single HBO days. This would come on. You would turn off the TV rather than have this even on in the background.
Oh, wow.
It is not good.
You're joking with this. This is real.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So I'm just looking at the, it's Tony Danza. Is it Tony Danza?
Yeah.
And Danny DeVito, bearded DeVito, holding a bunch of smiling apes. And I assume, without ever hearing this movie, that's something about them living with apes.
Something like that. I don't think, I vaguely remember seeing it, but it is also not funny.
Wow. Going Ape.
James Coco for Only When I Laugh. So I think that's is that a Christy McNichol movie or Marsha Mason, I think, but
Only When I Laughed is Marsha Mason.
Gotcha. Ernest Borgnine for Deadly Blessing.
Deadly Blessing.
Yeah. which I've seen once. It seemed to be, you know, it was just from that era. So,
okay.
Billy Barty for Under the Rainbow.
Under the Rainbow.
Are you familiar with that movie?
So, we've talked about this movie before.
The making of The Wizard of Oz, or a kind of glorified version of that.
I remember there's a Union Station scene that you did.
So all the little people arrived, Union Station, and Carrie Fisher and Chevy Chase pick them up and bring them to the Rainbow Hotel to shoot The Wizard of Oz. So again, why was Billy Barty picked out? You know, I think it's more because Under the Rainbow was a bad movie, so he just kind of got lumped into there. But
yeah, he's like wanting him.
But it's a guilty pleasure for mine.
Oh, nice.
Winner for Worst Supporting Actor, Steve Forrest for Mommy Dearest.
Mommy Dearest. Mommy Dearest swept that year.
And he's not even in it that much.
No, he's not. Yeah. It's surprising that. So they just had a vendetta against Mommy Dearest. So they're like, just throw Steve Forrest in there.
They did. Like, we hate this movie enough. So, but yeah, he's gone by the first act, I think. So,
yeah, he's in there very minimally.
But the thing is, like, he's not really... He doesn't have a big presence in the movie, so again, I'm not quite sure why he was singled out. So
yeah, for sure.
For worst actress, Barbara Streisand for All Night Long.
All Night Long.
Not familiar with that one. Brooke Shields for Endless Love. Linda Blair for Hell Night.
That's mean.
It is kind of mean. She was old enough, but you know what? This is, you know, 81. We're starting to ride the horror train and finding actress, you know, like, which is, it makes sense, you know, she's Jamie Lee Stata, you know, like, people knew who Linda Blair was and put her in a horror movie to make some money. So
yeah, the format works.
Yep. But for the worst actress, the winner is actually a tie. Bo Derek for Tarzan the Ape Man. Have you ever seen this?
Yes, it's kind of one of the worst movies ever.
Yeah, it's kind of a naughty skin movie. A typical, you know, Bo Derek takes off her clothes, I think.
It's a cult classic at this point.
Yeah. People weren't going to see Bo Derek speak, or actually even see Tarzan.
No.
It was not what the movie was about. So
No, not at all.
Not surprising. And
the great Richard Harris is in it as well.
Yeah. I'm sure everybody had a wonderful time making it.
Amazing. Wait, this was tied though.
Yes. So Faye Dunaway from Mommy Dearest.
Oh, there you go.
Just this is like Titanic at the Oscars.
I was just thinking that like a minute ago. This is like Titanic. They just swept this year.
Yeah. They're like, we did it. We did it.
We did it. Yeah. They're kings of the world. The tie is amazing. It's like, we can't decide. So the governing body, yeah, the Razzies just couldn't do it.
It was a big toss up. So, of course. For worst actor. So these I'm a little bit less familiar with. So Kris Kristofferson was nominated for two movies, Heaven's Gate and Rollover. Heaven's Gate was notoriously for being one of the worst performing movies ever.
It's still synonymous with it's going to be another Heaven's Gate. It's like Heaven's Gate and Waterworld. Even though Waterworld turned a profit, they didn't make as much as they should.
Yeah.
That,
and nobody actually saw Heaven's Gate. At least people saw Waterworld.
They made a ride out of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't
Heaven's Gate. Well, I mean, adjusted for inflation. Well, the actual numbers here, I'm looking at them. They budget of $44 million and only grossed $3 million. I mean, nobody really came out to see this.
No. Yeah. It was kind of a studio killer almost. But
and Sam Waterston was in it, who surprised after his Capricorn 1 fame wasn't pulling this movie in.
He was still writing that. It's like, this is going to be the next Capricorn 1.
Capricorn 1.
Richard Harris for Tarzan the Ape Man. Bruce Dern for Tattoo. One of my favorites, Gary Coleman for On the Right Track.
Oh, classic.
I love On the Right Track. So
Gary Coleman, this is the one. Which one is this one? I'm thinking
so this one else. he is homeless, but he's staying at a train station in a locker.
Oh, right. Yeah, he likes shine shoes.
Yeah. I saw this multiple times in the theater.
He's actually staying in a locker.
Yes. And it was kind of a neat thing at the time. You know, now it's just horrifying. I really want to, I don't think they even have this on DVD.
No, it's probably out of print.
No. I was talking to one of the actresses, the lead actress in it, and she was at the Hollywood show a couple years ago about it. And I was like, you don't have any On the Right Track photos?
She's not allowed to talk about it.
Yeah, she's like, we can't talk about it. So.
Norman Fell was in this.
Oh yeah, so it had it had a decent cast, yeah.
So,
and I think it did, must. Well, I paid to see it a couple times, so
it's amazing.
Worst actor winner, and this is an actor I do not know for a movie I did not see, Clinton Spilsbury for The Lone Ranger.
I've never heard of either.
I remember when it came out, it was kind of it feels like every 20 years they try to do a Lone Ranger, and it's just never, nobody has the nostalgia for it.
Well, I like these two. No, they don't. When they did it with Depp, nobody was asked for it. I do like I'm looking at the credits for it. There's two actors in here I think are phenomenal. One is Christopher Lloyd, and the other is Matt Clark.
Oh, well, I had no idea.
Matt Clark. I like that name. He's best known for his roles in Western films.
Can you just make that your IMDb?
I would like to. I would like to. So this movie, it looks like it just, nobody saw it.
No. It was also a boring, you know, it's like, I vaguely remember it show up on HBO, and there's just like, it's not even worth pretending to watch.
Don't even have it on in the background, kids. Just stop. Okay, so congratulations to Clinton Spilsbury. That name hurt that film, I think.
Yeah, who would want, you know?
Hey, so we're going to see the new Clinton Spilsbury. You can't even pronounce it right. It's sad.
Who played him in the Johnny Depp one?
Armie Hammer. That didn't hold up either.
Okay. Whew.
Yeah.
Also, actor not.
Yeah, Johnny Depp with Armie Hammer. I'm surprised that didn't hold up well. Good job, Disney.
Two of the greats.
Yeah, well, after you buy your popcorn, he's going to eat your face.
Worst director. So Franco Zeffirelli for Endless Love. Frank Perry for Mommy Dearest. Did not win, unfortunately. Blake Edwards for SOB. So Blake Edwards was kind of in that. I think he did 10. He kind of had the same kind of comedy, late 70s, early 80s, that quickly went out of style. John Derrick for Tarzan the Ape Man. But the winner was Michael, is it Cimino?
Cimino
for Heaven's Gate.
Heaven's Gate.
probably much deserved.
Yes, the Western epic that couldn't.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Michael.
For our Worst Pictures nominees, ones we've already talked about, Endless Love, Heaven's Gate, Legend of the Lone Ranger, I guess I should call it by its true title, Tarzan the Ape Man, but the winner was Mommy Dearest.
They swept the Razzies that year.
They were all excited. Mommy Dearest. Waiting, you know, like, for the call. Like, we got nominated.
Right, we got nominated. It's an honor just to be nominated. So the thing with Mommy Dearest is they wouldn't make that kind of movie today the way they did it then, but it's developed such like a cult following to it. I feel like it's favorably looked at historically. Like people, if anyone I know that's ever seen Mommy Dearest, like they like the movie.
Well, it's entertaining.
It's entertaining, right.
And we kind of keep in mind that this is probably not 100% real. There's probably some truths here and there. The weird thing is like Faye and Joan have literally kind of almost melded into one where you cannot distinguish who they are.
I know.
Which is, I guess, it's testament to Faye, I think. And I think Faye was also verging on, her personality was getting probably pretty close to Joan for kind of the commanding set and kind of how she acted. But you can't look away.
That's what it is. You can't look away. Like, you're glued.
Yeah. And there's enough of that, you know, I like that. And I imagine, and the thing is, nobody, Faye Dunaway is always like, only God knows what really happened between that mother and daughter. And she repeats that in every interview. And she's at one point kind of disowned the movie and refuses to talk about it. And then I think she's kind of came back around to at least acknowledge it. But she
time
also
is a thick nerve thing. So.
Yeah.
She also probably was like, we're going to talk about it.
Yeah. Felt like it ruined her career. It probably did not help, but I think she was also probably ruining her own career as well. But
I think so. Yeah. I don't think the movie was the catalyst that pushed that over, but
no, but I mean, there's still screenings and, you know, Rutanya Alda goes to screenings as Q&As after. And yeah, so it lives.
Oh, she does.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
No, that's so cool. Have you seen her?
She's milk on that as well. I have not seen her in real life. No.
Is there a Hollywood show coming up that you're going to?
There is a Hollywood show, and they have some great guests coming up. So
really?
I'm most excited. But the guest I'm most excited about is Donna Mills.
Who's Donna Mills?
What?
Who is Donna Mills?
Shut your mouth.
I don't know who that is. I mean, I don't know that name.
She was in Knott's Landing. She just showed up in Nope. If you've seen Nope, she played the blonde actress.
Oh, she's an older woman.
Yes.
Okay.
Wonderful.
I know Knott's Landing. Yeah. I've never watched it though.
Adrian's...
I was more of a Dynasty guy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In Dallas.
Adrian Zmed from Grease 2. I'm excited to meet him.
Yeah.
Charlie Schlatter. He played. I think he played Ferris Bueller in the TV series. Diane Ladd will be there.
Okay. Cool.
Meet her. I can't remember the name of the actress, but she in Witches of Eastwick, I still say this line, where Susan Sarandon's going to the grocery stores and everybody's calls her, you know, it's like slut, and she leaves, and as soon as she walks out the door, this woman turns going, she's not wearing a bra. That actress will be there, so I'm excited.
She's not. Are you gonna get her sign something with that?
I'm totally gonna have her sign that. So.
Oh, you got it.
Mindy Sterling, she was in the Austin Powers movies and Drop Dead Gorgeous. Michael Norrie from The Hidden.
Mindy Sterling.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to the Hollywood show from that. You can come to me. I'm good friends with the Sterling family.
Oh, are you?
Big time.
Now I know that. So
the brother helped me single-handedly almost get elected. He's a neighbor here. But they're a great family, and she's wonderful. So she's like a reason everybody should go to the Hollywood show.
Awesome. So there's a handful. I don't want to get too excited because like sometimes that one person you're waiting for cancels. But
who's canceled before? Who was like the whale that got away that you pissed about?
I wouldn't call him the whale. Michael Dorsey, is that his name? He played the sheriff in Halloween and Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends. was supposed to be at a Hollywood. I just wanted to. I kind of needed to finish my poster. And there was someone else. I can't remember. I kind of pushed it out of my mind. It's like, come on.
Subliminally block it and cut it. Yeah. Cut it off.
And the thing at the Hollywood show, nobody knows where anybody's at. Like, is so-and-so here? Like, I don't know if they showed up yet. Anyway.
Oh, is it kind of loosely put together where, not put together, but there's not like a map where you're like, this is here. They can kind of come and go when they please sort of thing.
Correct. Yeah, and people are like, wait, and people just don't know. And then you're just kind of like, it's like, oh, do I have to spend the whole day wandering? And because they're all in LA, it's not like a different, you know, show in Cincinnati or something like that. But they have nowhere else to go. You know, like, oh, maybe I'll go at 2 o'clock, you know.
You know, we're going to stop to eat and they're going to have a drink and they're going to be like, you know, I'm just not going to make it.
Yeah.
we're at Barney's Beanery in Burbank. So.
Yeah. Like, we can make it over. And sometimes it's weird for them because otherwise if they don't have a good show, you know, people come to their table are like, yeah, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Like that guy. Who's the guy that kissed your forehead again or touched it?
Oh, my God. Eddie Deason.
Eddie Deason. Does he still do the circuit?
Isn't he in jail? I don't know.
He was legally, he had some troubles.
Yeah. I don't know. That was kind of a special Grease one where they had a lot of the Grease cast. But
When's the next Hollywood show? It's
June something, I think. Let me see here.
Okay. So it's June.
June 30th. Yeah. End of June. July.
Okay. June 30th, so, July 1st. Yeah. Marriott Burbank Airport Hotel. And it's going to be some 55 celebrities are currently attending the show. Curtis Baldwin in Family Matters. He played the guy in Family Matters. Hal Williams.
The Family Matters guy, yeah.
Hal Williams is still alive.
Yep.
Jack Hay will be there. Marla Gibbs. William Shatner, Saturday only, folks. So William Shatner is such a big star. Does he... I'm assuming he doesn't have a booth that people can swarm him. Does he like speak on a stage or something like that?
So Hollywood show doesn't do that. Actually, William Shatner right now is in Kansas City for Planet Comic Con, and he filled a huge room. So I'm not sure what they're going to do here because that room is not that big, and people do come out for him. So I'm not sure what they're going to, you know, it's not like they have a side room for the A-list celebrities, but they're going to have to make some accommodations somehow, but he also doesn't put up with much. So I have met him once to get a photo with him and.
Oh, really?
That was, it was kind of where you stand next to him and takes a picture and you move on. Zero interaction.
They keep the line moving kind of thing.
But less for Star Trek for me than Miss Congeniality.
Because I know you love Miss Congeniality. We've talked about that.
Yeah. So
now you have to do something when you go there. Carney Wilson is going to be there. You have to say, hey, I'm a big fan. Can I have your autograph? And then slowly say, someday somebody's going to make you going to lose your mind. And start singing.
And she'll probably just like, get out of here.
So there's a good lineup there.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I mean, it looks pretty solid.
Yeah. Sometimes they had shows. I mean, they have good, not bad shows, but there's some like, not quite worth it. I skipped the last one or two because I'm like, it's not quite worth getting on the plane for one or two, you know.
You did do that once. I thought it was funny because you're like, I'm not going. The show lineup isn't that good. And I'm like, oh, those poor people.
They're like, not good enough. But Donna Mills, I'd be there in a heartbeat. So
Gary Combs will be there. He was a Star Trek stuntman.
Oh.
And his picture stands out because it's him in a Star Trek character. You don't actually know what he looks like. So how would you know who he is there?
That's where it turns into some, you feel, but you know, cause like they do kind of get a lot of original series, Star Trek and original TV series. I'm saying Star Trek people that at this point, if you're a Star Trek fan, you've probably met. Like me is like, I think I've met all the Fry the Tin cast. I need to, you know,
Yeah, at this point, you don't need to really.
I don't need to go to another convention where I'm like, oh, I can't wait to meet stuntman number two, you know.
A lot of those people, and there's no shame in this at all, but they come out for the money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, all these people do.
Yeah. Because, you know, if you're not a working actor anymore and your contract wasn't great or residuals or the show's not on, you want to get paid off your name, which anybody would. Absolutely. So it makes sense.
Ken Lerner will be there. So he's a character actor.
Flutie, right?
Yep, Principal Flutie. He was actually on our plane once. Flying.
Flutie was on your plane?
Yeah, he was flying into LA. And my sister, I think we were there coming to the LA for the Oscars. I remember my sister was like, oh, I think that's Principal Flutie. And then
Flutie. So
he happened to be, we're like, so well, cool. If we catch up to him, you know, Burbank's a small airport. So he was waiting for suitcases, you know, in that kind of outdoor area to come off the thing. So yeah, we approached him and we were like, are you? I don't think we knew his name. And he's like, he said, if you're a true Buffy fan, how did I die? And my sister's like, the wolf pack killed you. You know, like he's like, all right. And so he took some pictures, which was nice.
She knows.
Yeah. Yeah. So she knew, but yeah, there's been a number of,
There's one in here. Mimi Gibson. She was an actress in the 50s and 60s. And like the gentleman up here in the, Gary Combs, you don't actually like Google her, you wouldn't know what she looks like. So anybody can kind of show up.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm not implying that's what happens. Obviously, it's the real people, but it's just funny that their promotional from the 50s is a 70-year-old photo.
Yeah. And you could be, you're probably grocery shopping with these people and you have no idea that.
You never know.
Yeah.
Here's Mindy Sterling. Mo Collins will be there. She was in Mad TV, which is always cool. I'm not going to read through all the list. I know there's tons, but it looks like there's a pretty solid crowd coming here.
Yeah.
Sandra Lee Gimple, this is her real face, which is unfortunate. No.
Hey.
Here's the thing. She's another stunt background performer.
Yeah.
Is that a big demographic at these shows, like stunt people, or is it mostly actors?
It's mostly actors, and that's where... When you walk around and people are just sitting at their table staring at their phones, and it does get weird, you know.
I've never been. Yeah. I'd love to go, especially if Stephen Tobolowsky's there.
Yeah, I've met him.
Beetlenose Ned the Head.
Yeah, yep. So you've not been to a Hollywood show?
No, I've never been.
Oh, you have to go.
I have to go. Yeah, put me down for June. We'll go.
All right,
we'll go. Can you bring cameras in there?
Yeah. You pay for pictures, but yeah. But they, like, you know, last time I went, you know, they had Tom Skerritt, you know, they had decent people. They had like Christopher Lloyd and Leah Thompson and
huge.
So they get some decent people. So you reminded me, I remember thinking about also flying Southwest as the stars do. So Kelly Carlson, she played Kimber on Nip Tuck. Did you ever watch Nip Tuck?
I have, yes.
So the thing is,
Nip Tuck was a good show.
I loved Nip Tuck. It was kind of ludicrous. And so, we didn't recognize her at first because we were sitting across from her in the terminal, and she kind of seemed familiar in a way, but not an actress familiar. Her hair was a different color. And then we got in the plane, and my sister again, and she's like, she goes, I think that's Kimber. And then
I think that's Kimber.
I could see the top of her head, and I could just see it talking nonstop to the stranger next to her. And I'm like, yeah, that's an actress. Yes.
Right. Of course. Yeah. If they're talking nonstop, just give them like a little pathway, a bridge to talk about themselves.
They're like, let me talk about me. So she had a connecting flight. We had both had connecting flight and Phoenix, I think it was. And so we stopped her on the way out and stuff like that. So, but.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, you never know. My favorite though, Southwest encounter was Linda Gray from Dallas.
Oh, nice. That's so cool.
Yeah. So
what was what was the mood?
I was eating something, you know, and then she walked by in big sunglasses, even sunglasses. I thought I kind of did this, and I think she saw me kind of, you know, people know when you kind of do a recognition. I'm like, it's like, Linda Gray. And then, but I'm eating, you know, I'm not going to be a weirdo and kind of jump up and so forth. And so I go to my gate, and she's sitting across from me, and I was like, oh. You know, I just kind of looking, and so I went over and I'm like, are you Linda Gray? She goes, well, yes, I am. And and she was like, yes, super sweet. Yeah. And aww. So took a picture with her and so forth, and talking about conventions or whatever. And then I bumped into her, or not bumped into her, she did a Hollywood show a few months later, and so she wrote a nice, you know, to my Burbank friend or something like that.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah. So she was really great. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you like to hear.
Yes.
So the Hollywood show, Robert will be there June 30th through July 1st.
I'll have a table. I'm
just kidding. Robert will have a table. Come get his autograph, $25. Before we get into...
Photos extra.
of course. Yeah, at least 50 to 75. Yeah. Before we get into Blind Man's Bluff, we have a special treat. It's the world premiere of King Kong Lives, the trailer. And in the height and the excitement of Robert getting this on, was it Blu-ray or 4K?
I think it's just Blu-ray.
It was on Blu-ray.
Okay, yeah.
We're gonna watch the trailer. Is that okay with you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I've seen the trailer, so yes.
Or okay. It's been a while. You haven't seen it, it's always kind of exciting.
All right.
All right. Here we go. In 5, 4, 3, 2. Did not share the sound. Did not share the sound. Hold on.
Darn it.
Darn it.
How's our boy doing?
Incredible.
Now, easy, big guy. Hold on.
They're approximately 50 feet tall, wearing their birthday suits.
God, look at the size of him.
Did you say your beast is a female?
He was trying to get to the female.
So
oh, my God.
What have they done to her?
She's pregnant.
You had the female!
America's biggest hero is back. And he is not happy. King Kong Lives.
Kong Lives, everybody. You know what I love about King Kong is you have this amazing wonder of the world, the eighth wonder of the world, something that's never been seen before. And the first reaction is just to kill it. It's like, what do you want to study it? That would ever happen. I know, I get it. It's
American way.
But like, you know, say there's like a giant butterfly. The first thing would be like, let's sedate it.
Let's shoot it.
Let's, you know, why kill it? Why are we trying to kill him? But her. But it's America's biggest hero, Robert, and she's not happy.
Incredible.
Incredible. You know what I love about the trailer is the quick cuts of the words, like in real time. It's almost like a Grindhouse spoof kind of trailer. We're like, he's not happy right now. It's like, oh, I can't read. I'm having a seizure. It's an amazing trailer.
Yeah, well, they're trying to trick you. So
right.
Nobody would go to the theater to see this with me. So I had to wait till video. So
I would have went with you, and your friend Brian.
And probably rightly so. So, and I do feel bad because this is the director's end up being his last film. Like nobody would hire him. He said he had enough after this.
Wait, Dino De Laurentiis?
No, John Gillerman, I think is his name.
Dino just produced the director, it. Okay.
Yeah, but this because he had directed Death on the Nile and Towering Inferno and stuff like that. So, this, and the original King Kong as well, which is good. The original King Kong I do enjoy that movie.
The 76 one?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, it's great. I love that movie.
But
I even love the fake Kong. They're all fake, but the super big one when they cut to him with the eyes,
barely moving. Like,
yeah, but like we have to use this thing. We spent like $300,000 on it, but it's such a good movie. It's so much fun.
It is. This one is not fun, and it always starts with like you know, because I'm like, yeah, I'm like, well, why isn't this more enjoyable? And then I forget. It kind of like peters off into kind of nothingness and.
Yeah, it's on YouTube, folks, if you want to stream it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So if you don't want to shell it out for the Blu-ray, you can just see it for free.
The original King Kong Lives, or King Kong, I'm sorry, King Kong from the 76 it was?
Yes.
I stumbled upon that when I was like a kid. My parents had that on Betamax, if you remember Betamax.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And like in the basement, and I like stumbled upon this, and I was like, oh, my gosh. And I watched it with like a neighbor kid, and like, we didn't understand, like, why do they care about the oil so much? What are they doing? But then when we saw Kong, to this day, that's still, like, one of my favorite movies. It's just so cool. And as a kid watching that, you're like, this is amazing. But that movie holds up, King Kong. Yep. That's
it
a good movie.
Yeah, it was a great reveal, you know, for Kong, you know, the moving branches and Jessica Lange and her pretty much introductory role. And but yeah, so that one has
Jeff Bridges.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is true. I mean, obviously it's very 70s.
Yeah.
But yeah, so actually, my sister went to see it in the theater, and I was too scared to go see it in the theater. And she's 4 years younger than me, so.
Oh, well,
she was like 2.5 years old when she saw King Kong in the theater.
Good for her.
Yeah, good for her. I was too much of a wimpy kid to see it.
I would have been with you. I would have been too scared.
I was like, I saw the preview, and I'm like, I would have had nightmares. Yeah. So, as a wimpy kid.
He had some fangs on him, Kong. He wasn't. Yeah. That was no joke.
Yeah. It was scary.
It was scary.
Yeah.
So.
But. Yeah. King Kong lives, people. Check it
out. King Kong lives. Check it out. And finally, on Set Jetter Saturdays, we have a special treat tonight. We're gonna get away and kind of dive our pinky toe into a music video of Robert's. I'm very excited about this one. And I know Robert. You probably won't be because you did the page and you know what I'm going to show you. This is not anything new to you.
Yeah. Do I have to guess again?
You know what? I think you do.
Okay.
Today marks the anniversary of blank. As she will be embarking on a celebration tour this year.
Madonna.
I'm finally getting around. It is Madonna. Yeah. But which video?
Okay. Oh, I feel like it's one I just did an update for. So
I feel like you did.
I should know this. Is it
the video was shot almost entirely just outside of downtown Los Angeles?
That borderline.
Yes, sir. Okay, in the Madonna chronological in her chronology in her music catalog, is this like her first single?
Not the first. It's one of the first, I think, because I think that was off the first album, if I remember correctly.
Which was just called Madonna, right?
Yeah. So, and if it was 83, which I think it was, it had to be kind of pretty early on. So
this is 1983, and this is this is a great song, obviously. It's a classic, but there's the cover of the single artwork.
Yep.
And this is Borderline. Is that okay? We do Borderline?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So, So this location actually, and it's already changed since my pictures. This is now parking kind of underneath this bridge. So the bridge is right under it's South Santa Fe Avenue. So it's kind of right outside of LA. Now it's kind of the arts district of downtown LA.
Yes.
So nothing will be like this for very much longer if it's not already torn down. But
it was also shot used in Leprechaun 6 Back to the Hood.
Yes, that kind of same spot, which I know the Leprechaun 6, a couple of those spots are already gone. They've taken
that really?
Down. So, since there, you know, this little staircase that the photographer comes down, I started to walk up there and it was not, I turned back around. Now I think it's all kind of been cleaned up a little bit.
Oh, it was stuff on the ground?
Yes, we'll just say that. So,
got it. Well, the barbed wire fence usually gives
that's usually an indication. Yeah. So, but as fans may know that downtown LA, these parts are kind of being overtaken by high priced arts district lofts and
with a vengeance
and everything. So now you have to pay to park down there, I think. So I tried to go get location. I'm like, I can't even find a parking space where it used to be like kind of scary to park. But a bunch of this was, you know, the opening scenes were kind of shot around this kind of bridge area, which you can still visit and still
check it out.
Pretty recognizable. I know they did a paint job of this under, like, the bridge underneath. You could still see the same scratches and marks and stuff like that, but I think they painted it to make it look nicer, so it's not quite
but when you authentic. Shot this, you still see
you could still, the markings are still, you know, the same as they were in the movie. But
so anyway, like 35 years later, they really which I always think is cool. And I see a lot of your work from the early 80s. I always, lately, my thing is seeing how much it's changed and what's still there. And it's amazing. You can still see, like, it's almost always architecturally, like, unless it's trees or something, like concrete or something, you can see like the same sidewalk marking, but it's always kind of amazing when you see like nothing's really been done. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. No, I like when it kind of retains the same. So,
yeah.
And then I think next is the bar, the kind of pool hall. So this pool hall is gone, but I found this photo online of, it's called El Guanaco bar.
Oh.
And so I gave this gal credit who took the photo in 82, I think, before the video was shot. So just kind of show what it looks like.
Yeah.
And if you
I love the bracelets on her too.
Yeah. Well, of course she
you have to.
Made that a thing. So now you can kind of see what it looks like without the bar there. Yeah.
Not as cool.
Not as cool, but across the street, the buildings are still the same, so you can still match that up. So,
oh yeah.
And if you go a little farther down, right there, so the photographer's studio, I was able to track down where they shot that.
Is that your car?
Yeah, so I parked right where nice. They parked the car, and then nice. I walked across the street to take a picture. And my other Madonna friend, she's actually in the car, and I'm walking back up, and you can't see it, but there's a window above this kind of garage, and this guy kind of poked his head like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, I'm taking pictures."
Did Madonna, he really?
Yeah, and so I said, "Madonna shot her video here." He's like, "Yeah, I know." I was like, "Oh,
squirrely kids."
Yeah, and I was like, you know me, I was like, "Can I get some pictures inside?" And he said, "Sure."
And here we are.
And here we are.
Oh, nice pun and lucky star me.
Yes, I forgot I wrote that.
It's amazing. Oh wow, so, you really did get inside.
Yeah, so this is, you know, looks virtually the same, and obviously they had kind of those pillars, but if you go to about like shot 3, I think, down there, you can see the stairs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so this is
they added a wall.
They kind of put some what do you call it? Rather than just kind of railings and so forth, they kind of added some more drywall and so forth to it. So got to go in where they shot the photography studio for Borderline.
That is so cool. Nice.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Robert's Check. Luck.
Robert's Luck. Yes. There's something to be said about that. That's a great piece of music history too. I mean,
oh yeah.
Early Madonna in the early 80s is, it's pretty cool what you got in there.
I was wearing my Madonna shirt.
Yes. What does it say? Watch.
Bitch, I'm Madonna.
Oh,
that was so. Yeah, so this is right before the MDNA tour, I think it was. Yeah,
which was what, like, what year?
2012. Is that
okay,
right?
Cool.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great yeah. photo shoot. I like the music videos, throwing them in once in a while because I don't forget that you do them, but I usually just go to the movie. So when I scroll down more and I see it, it's always cool.
I'm working on another Madonna music video, which I don't know why I have not done until now, but her Hung Up music video.
Oh, yes.
It was part
of LA leotards.
Well, oh, God, no. there's only a couple exteriors, so part LA, part London. So I have a friend in London that I said, hey, next time, or he's outside of London. So next time you go, I give him directions on what I want, pictures, and then I found the LA locations. So
I was going to mention or ask, because I know it was in London. That whole time was always, I thought it was like a really exciting time when she did the, cause she was in her London phase, you know?
Oh yes.
Married to guy, is it Guy Ritchie?
Yep.
Yeah. So she was all into that, but that's a cool video. I still like that video.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It holds up and I'm like, why have I not worked on this video before? So, next time I'm in LA, I'll do some.
Is this, that's on your list?
It is. And I remember, I think it might be in a questionable area. Of LA.
Seeds growing around.
Yeah. Now that I have you, I'm like, I have to look it up to see what part of area it is. But yeah, it's kind of in that central South Los Angeles area. So indoor shots, I think this was kind of London. Once the kids start dancing.
She's very flexible.
And her red hair is back.
The red hair is back?
Yeah, so this is London. And that parkour, the African-American, was in the James Bond movie.
I recognize it. So, the new tour, when does it launch?
I think July, June or July. So.
Oh, it's right around the corner.
Yeah.
Where does the new tour kick off? You told me, but I forgot.
Vancouver. So here we are in LA.
Hello,
Why have they not been to those locations yet?
We're waiting for the red hair to come back.
I encourage everybody to remember that Robert has put at least two of Madonna's children in college, so try to show a little respect. Oh, by the way, that's been a new thing of mine, the Jurassic Park Sam Neill. Try to show a little respect. It looks like, Matt, did you do the SEO on the webpage we asked? Oh, no, I did that last week, so try to show a little respect. He's kind of an asshole. Like, no, it's Jurassic Park.
And I met most of these dancers, so I really
have you? You like, you have photos with them and stuff?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
And one became a more established actress. She was in The Mummy.
Really? Somebody in this right here?
She's one of the dancers. Sophia Cortella.
Oh. Oh, okay.
But yeah, so keep a lookout right this summer. Hung up.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's cool.
They take a cab from LA to London.
Yes, it's very geographically possible.
That's why they're kind of shocked when they get out. Like, where the hell are you?
Hey, it's movie magic, you know?
Yeah, so. But anyway, I tracked down that spot as well, so I need somebody to go take pictures for me.
Heck yes, that'll be your show tonight, Robert, unless you had anything else, sir?
No, that's good.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the Podcastle's Setjetter Saturdays. Don't forget to check out Robert's website at setjetter.com. We will see you on the set.
We came across this 40-foot man, a colossus on our tiny island. We nearly lost him up on Sandy Cove Strand, but he, being swept away, was part of his plan.